Hey, everybody, welcome back to Daniel Davis Deep Dive. Wanted to give you an update today because we've had some additional information since we were on earlier today talking about the potential for a peace plan which could end the Russia-Ukraine war. The United States has been talking to members of the Russian delegation, and according to Axios and Wall Street Journal and a number of other outlets, there has been some additional movement in there that could forestall this war to continue on, which could bring it to an end, which is something we're definitely for here. Now, since that time, I actually communicated with Larry Johnson, who's on our show a lot, who happens to be in Moscow right now, and he was with some of the Russian figures. He's doing some interviews for his show, but he said he was able to talk to Maria Zakharova, which is Ministry of Foreign Affairs state's spokesman. And he said he asked her about this, and he said that what he was told, what they're willing to disclose personally is, yes, there are conversations going on at the high levels, but there is nothing to report at this time. There are still some sticking points. Subsequent interviews, actually, information we've had actually in Axios said that, listen, one of the key aspects here and what may be a big sticking point is that the Ukraine side is being asked to give up those four oblasts. Now, that does go back to what the Russians were asking for back in June of 2024. That may be what Kirill Dmitriev has said. Well, at least they're looking at the Russian positions. But even he was kind of guarded in what he said on that. And when you look at some of the details, again, what's being reported is that what the United States is offering is saying, hey, you can have all of those territories that you have asked for already. That's your position, in exchange for security guarantees for what's left of Ukraine by the United States and presumably also the European Union. I can't imagine we would do it by ourselves. But that's not a good plan. That's not a good idea. That, number one, let's look at it from the U.S. perspective. That's a bad idea. Do not, under any circumstances, even falsely claim, even put a fig leaf on that we would provide any kind of security guarantees in the future for Ukraine. And look, it should be self-evident. If we're not willing to go to war for Ukraine now, and we haven't for 4 years, upon what logic and justification would we do it later on in the future? After all, this has come to an end, and then there's some flare-up after this has been solidified and some kind of peace agreement has ended, and then something happens in the future that then we would go to war with Russia when we won't do it right now. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. We're right for not doing it right now. We're right for not having gone to war with Russia over the past 4 years, and we would be wrong if we did so in the future. So in all probability, any kind of a verbal agreement that we would provide security guarantees for Ukraine would be not worth the paper that they're written on. And I don't know why anybody would want to do that. That kind of security guarantee is something akin to Article 5 in NATO. And we've already said we're not going to let them come into NATO. Russia has already said NATO, the possibility of NATO coming into Ukraine is what caused the war in the first place, i.e. their root causes. So why would they want to agree to it? Let's just say for a moment that the United States thought it was a good idea, and they didn't listen to our advice, and they did it anyway. They said, yes, we're going to give some kind of security guarantee. For whatever reason, something that would happen later on would be different. I don't imagine it, but let's just say for the sake of argument that such an argument can be made. Why would Russia agree to that? Consider where they are right now. They are definitely moving forward. We've talked about that earlier today, and in recent shows I chronicled what's going on the front line in the air with the manpower and all that. All of it is in Russia's favor. They are moving forward. They're picking up the pace, both of the speed with which they're killing Ukraine's armed forces and with the territory they're now capturing. All they have to do is just let things ride, and they're going to end up having everything. They will have a lot more than just those four oblasts. They will have as much as they want, as much as they're willing to pay for, because it's not free. They will have to spend time. They'll have to spend troops. They'll have to spend resources and all that. So it's not cost-free, but it is something you can just choose to pay, and you can accomplish that. The same is not true on the Western side, on the Ukrainian side. No matter how much money they pay, they cannot stop what's going on here. So they don't have as many choices here in reality, but the Russians do. So what's being presented anyway, what's being reported is that they can say, okay, we have one offer here on the Western side that we can get what we want. We don't have to pay any more for that. But then it comes at a pretty high cost, because now then there are security guarantees on the other side of that. So if the Ukraine side should get frisky and decide to do something and they're they spawn another war. They start it, no matter whose fault it is, a war is begun in the future, a conflict. Now all of a sudden they may have an Article 5 type guarantee from the United States, from NATO, et cetera. Or they can go on with the status quo. They can just continue what they're doing now, and they'll be able to take not just the Donbas and the rest of whatever's being offered from the June 2024 offer. They can take it all. And they can go up to the Dnieper River. They can go to Odessa. They can take Kharkiv City. They can perhaps go up to Kiev. They can or they can keep going all the way through. If there's some reason why they choose to do that, while they think it's in the Russian interest, they can pay that price too. It would be a lot steeper in both during the conflict and after it for a long period of time with insurgent fights and all that, partisan fighting. You can be guaranteed of that. So, but that's something that Russia can choose. And then wherever they choose to stop, there's no security guarantee. So it would be irrational and illogical and counterproductive from the Russian side to accept that deal. I'm guessing that one of the reasons why, in fact, actually we have Dmitry Peskov, he reiterated actually in the Moscow Times just earlier today, he said there were talks held in Anchorage and so far there's nothing to add about what was discussed in Anchorage. As he said there, you know, talking about this 28-point peace proposal, I would imagine that what was discussed in Anchorage and probably the code that he sent, and maybe even to the United States who does know, is that, hey, we told you these terms are non-negotiable. All the things we talked about, the territory, demilitarization, denazification, and no NATO, all of those things. And of course, security guarantees, I'm sorry, guarantees for the Russian people living inside of Ukraine. So a change in the constitution, et cetera. All those things are on the table from Alaska. The readout from the Alaska meeting after, from the Russian side, after that Alaska meeting earlier this summer, they said that those were the conditions hadn't been changed. So probably what Peskov is signaling there is that that's still the same deal. And I can't imagine why anybody would want to, on the Russian side, would want to change any of that to their detriment when they have the ability to do it. I mean, they would literally be helping out the Ukraine side and throwing them a bone. And because if you give that kind of security guarantee, then there's probably no way you get demilitarization or denazification, however defined, on the Russian side. And I can't imagine them from a position of power being willing to do that. So this probably is not going to go much further. It does represent, though, and let me say this on the positive side, the United States appears to be moving further down the line of recognizing reality. The fact that allegedly that it's on the table that we say, no, we'll support Ukraine having to give up this part of the Donbas, which wasn't on the table before. So if that's the case, that represents a move forward. But the fact is, Russia is in a position to where it can require maximalist objectives, or it's not going to have a deal. Because, see, they're thinking long term. The Russians are not thinking short term. We just want to get this thing over with. We want to get it off the table. It's an eyesore. It's a bleeding ulcer. Any bad imagery you want to use, we want to get this over with. But the Russians are thinking long term. They're thinking after this war is over, and Putin is focused on the foreseeable future security. And if he can get a temporary deal that's less costly in the short term, but keeps alive the possibility of renewed conflict in the medium and long term, that's not a success from the Russian side. And I doubt anyone in Russia will believe that it's so. He would rather not get this short term benefit here at a lesser cost, but pay an even greater cost. But then at the end of this, have something that is solidified. And then now, then without any security guarantees from the other side, he now has control over the territory and the governments on the other side, et cetera. All those things are within their power to take if they're willing to pay that price. I think they probably are. We'll see how that's going to work out there. By the way, one thing that doesn't seem to be playing into this at all from the United States, if I'm going to give them credit, then I also have to scratch my head and say, what are you talking about here? And that is the fact that yesterday, Ukraine's general staff said that a strike was a significant development that underscores Ukraine's unwavering commitment to its sovereignty. Ukraine confirmed the use of U.S. ATACMS. And as I understand, that's the first time during the Trump administration that's been authorized. The Pentagon restricted that when Trump first came into office. And now here it apparently, and this has been confirmed by the Russians earlier today, that they have been acknowledged it. And the question is, why? what are we trying to get done here? What is the intent here? Now, according to the Russians, there were four ATACMS missiles fired at Voronezh, which is in the southern part of Russia. The Russians claimed that their S-400 systems and other interceptor capabilities shot all four of them down. They said some of the debris fell on some houses and there was some local damage, but nothing that was serious, and none of the targets that were actually sought after were actually hit. I don't know if it's true or not. That's what the Russians are reporting. But the bottom line is that they're, you know, that nothing seriously happened, that they're saying they need to have some sort of retaliation and response. But the question is, why would we allow those long-range weapons to be fired now? Is this somehow an attempt to bring pressure on Russia? Do we imagine that by allowing these, you know, these four missiles to be fired, that somehow that's going to compel Russia to say, okay, all right, tell you what, we'll go ahead and accept this deal on the table here? If it is, that's a pretty rookie mistake. And it's not tied to reality. I mean, because Russia's looking at this from the strategic point of view, and these missiles are at best operational, and most likely they're more like tactical, meaning that they're not going to have anything to do with the strategic balance overall at all. And especially if they get shot down. And because there has been a number of these things fired along with the HIMARS systems, which have the very similar guidance capabilities, they're fired from the same kind of vehicle, the Russians have a pretty good idea and a good track record of how to defeat these things, whether shooting them down with S-400s or knocking them off target with electronic warfare capabilities. They've been doing all of those things here. So you're not going to actually accomplish anything here. You might actually get lucky in a bad way and have something get through the system, because no systems are perfect. And if one of those missiles gets through and it has a severe, high casualty count, it hits something really important or so, then you have the risk of Russia retaliating. That's not going to help anybody. So I don't really understand what anybody in the United States think that was going to help, because, and it has to be from the U.S., it wasn't just from Ukraine. They would have been firing this thing all along if it was just up to them. So that means the United States, because you can't fire an ATACMS without direct participation of the United States in the target acquisition and the selection rate. There's a number of things that can't be handed over to the Ukraine side that can only be done by the United States. So we know that the United States participated in this. Russians know it. Question is, what are you trying to accomplish with this? And you look at the Russians, I think overnight, I think one report said somewhere around 80 missiles of various types and calibers were fired at Ukraine overnight. A great many of them found their targets and got through. It was painful for Ukraine, but it was not anything unusual. It doesn't happen a lot in Ukraine from Russia, and that doesn't knock them out of the war. It makes it painful and makes it more difficult here and there. What do you think four are going to do? And you know that all four of them aren't going to get through. And those are the first ones that have been fired in a long time. There's a handful of Storm Shadows that have been fired over the last few months. Some have gotten through. Some of the Ukraine's own long-range stuff gets through, apparently just in the last few days. Some of their stuff actually does get through. And you see some videos of things burning, et cetera, but it doesn't change anything on the front line. So what's the intent here? Is it just, I want to hurt Russia because I can? Because all that does, it primarily is, it just reinforces and convinces the Russians that the only way that they're going to get this solved is to just go on to a complete destruction of the Ukrainian armed forces. Doesn't make them ever think about backing down. So in that sense, that, yeah, you may hurt Russia here and there, and you may make them mad, but all it's going to do is like making a hornet's nest mad. I mean, it's going to get you stung even worse, and the hornets will just rebuild their nest if you mess up with the nest, et cetera. There's no good use in this. I hope that we recognize this, and that somehow we recognize that there is one path to get this over, and that is to a negotiated settlement that has an ugly outcome for the Ukraine side, but that would succeed in ending the killing, the destruction, and the deaths of so many in Ukraine. We'll see what's going to happen. Before I let you go today, though, there's one more thing I want to talk about, which is really odd. I was actually on News Nation television channel early this afternoon. This is the first time I'd seen it. They played for me this video of a bunch of Democratic senators and members of the House of Representatives who were saying to the armed forces of the United States, do not obey illegal orders. And they just a whole bunch of potpourri of different members, men and women, just saying all this stuff. And, I think they were all veterans of one sort or another, one capacity. And, and they're looking into the camera and they're saying, don't obey illegal orders, et cetera. This all appears to be related to the attacks against the speedboats in the Caribbean Ocean. Now, I will say, as I have said every time we've talked about this, that I consider those strikes to be illegal. I think that they violate American Constitution. They violate the 1973 War Powers Act, and they just violate American law, because running drugs is not a lethal or is not a fatal attack. It's not you can't be convicted and then executed. That's not part of our laws. So if no law in America has the death penalty for drug running, and you're not even trying to capture anybody, you're just, it's basically summary execution. There's no way around it. That's what it is. It's a summary execution for a non-capital offense. That's what we're doing. So in my view, and that's why I'm emphatic about it, it is illegal. But that is illegal at the order given by the President of the United States and by the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of War. Now, it gets into a lot more gray area when you're talking about the armed service members, because there is, and this was also played during the my appearance earlier today, when one of the spokesmen for the Defense Department said, oh, no, this is definitely legal. We had our lawyers look at this, and they cited all this stuff. It's just a bunch of legal mumbo jumbo. It's been happening a long time. When you're talking to members of the armed forces and you're telling them openly, don't obey these illegal orders, that's into a gray area, because what's illegal about the order? Now, it can be argued that executing these orders is illegal because the act itself is illegal. But if you have the authorities over you who are telling you it is legal, and they show legal justification, and they say, well, we have intelligence that provides X, Y, and Z, and then you don't obey the order, you're running the risk that you go to jail. Because Article 92 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which every member of the armed forces has to abide by, it says that if you don't obey the legal order of those above you, you will be court-martialed and you could go to jail. So these members of Congress are putting on the lowest element down here, the people who are at the trigger pullers, saying don't obey this order. Here's the truth. If you think that, and I do, and you're a member of Congress or a member of the Senate, you have some authority. You have some power. You can do something. You can sue the government. You can bring legislation up. That's what you are. You're the legislative branch. You can use the bully pulpit. You can use your social media platform. You can use your power as a member of Congress. You can do something about it. Use your capability. Lobby for it. Put bills up there. Try to convince the American public it's a bad thing. Don't put this on the shoulders of a sergeant or a private or a captain or a lieutenant colonel, something like that, and say, don't pull the trigger. You don't do this part here. Well, you do nothing except for make this one video here. That's not their job. And it's a slippery slope when a political entity starts telling the supposed to be apolitical military not to obey some orders here. And they're the sole ones that are going to suffer the consequences here. Now, I think, and I think I've said so on air, that some of these general officers, the guys who are like in charge of this stuff, I think that there's a little bit more of an argument to be made that they need to do something more. I would say resign. I would say, if you believe that this is not a lawful order, and I've laid it out there pretty clearly, there's strong justification that it is not legal, then you can resign. You can. That could work. I would be okay if you were talking to the generals and suggesting that they resign, for example. But to just outright recommend insubordination and refuse to obey an order that if the legal system, and sometimes that's different than what's actually the truth about what's legal or not, but if the legal system determines that the law was followed and that the UCMJ does not apply there because the law above you and the leaders above you have designated this as a legal deal, then you're guilty. No matter what Daniel Davis tells you on this show here, no matter what this Democratic Senator or Democratic House of Representatives tell you, if you act on that in opposition to what the system says, then you're going to jail. And you have these members of the House of Representatives and Senate not willing to take any risk at all, and they're telling you to do it. And you're asking individuals to interpret the law and then act on their own, and that's just a recipe for disaster. As bad as I think it is that the government is taking care of this, and I think that the members of the House of Representatives have a responsibility to take action on what apparently they believe, don't throw that on the lowest level here and let them have all the risk of what happens after that. Because where does this stop? You know, you start saying, well, I don't think this one's, then it's a policy issue. Well, I think this is a bad policy. I don't think that we should do it. Where do you draw the line here? If it's something simple, like I think I've used this example, if it's like, yes, you should, if you get an order that says, destroy that civilian house over there and kill those people. Well, that's black and white. That's an illegal and unauthorized order. And we're authorized and we're actually required to not obey an illegal order. And there's ways that we literally get training in this all the time about that we're obligated not to obey an illegal order. And they talk about some of this specific things. That's one of the examples that's given. And, you know, they say, let me clarify this. Are you telling me to kill this innocent person over here, et cetera? There's things that you can do. But when it's in a gray area like this one is here, it's not such a cut and dried thing to do. And to put that responsibility on our troops is just the wrong thing to do. Well, that's what we got for you today, folks. We'll keep an eye on this and we'll see if anything continues to develop. If anything happens in this peace plan, you can count on us bringing it to you. If anything happens more in this, the Epstein files getting released, we'll give you something more on that tomorrow. And in the meantime, appreciate you guys. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.